tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, D-Nice. Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. Happy Turkey Day.
Okay.
And most of all, happy anniversary. Okay. You're not ready. Why aren't you ready? You're not going to tell? Hello. Reciprocate.
I'm here.
Reciprocate.
Happy anniversary.
See?
Isn't that what reciprocation is?
I can't stand you. Anyway, we'll get to all of that. So obviously yesterday was Turkey Day in the U.S. And there are a lot of mixed emotions about how to properly celebrate that day. We won't say too much about that. I want to move straight into the good stuff.
What's the good stuff?
So, what happened this week? The day that we've been preparing for has come. Kanye was hospitalized for what seems to have been a mental health emergency. Now, as you know, I was tempted not to talk to you about this because you were showing your true self.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
The Voldemort in me.
You were showing
what side that lives within me.
You are a patriarch in feminist clothing, but
that's right. That's what they always. That's my screen name. You figured out my SoundCloud password.
But I'm sure everyone has heard now about Kanye going on a rant at a concert recently, going in on everyone from, you know, Beyonce and Jay-Z to offering his support to Donald Trump. And then shortly after that, he left the stage 30 minutes into the concert. It was over. Then shortly after that, he canceled the rest of the St. Pablo tour due to so-called sleep deprivation.
Mm.
Shortly after that, pictures were taken of him handcuffed to a stretcher. He was taken in an ambulance to UCLA Medical Center, where he was involuntarily put into the psychiatric ward.
And the involuntary thing is what like hit me. But, you know, everybody who knows Kanye, like at what point would we know of him?
Right.
At what point would we expect a voluntary anything? Right.
Absolutely. And yeah, even though he does rap about taking Lexapro, which is an antidepressant. So what I think is most interesting about this is an article that I saw on Mike that said, if Kanye West deserves our compassion, so does Azealia Banks.
Mm, okay. I know that brought up some deep feelings for you. Would you like to share?
Wow. Wow.
You know it brought up some feelings. Come on now. Let it out.
I'd like to get your take on it. Do you think that there is a disparity in the way that Black men and Black women are treated, the professionals, the sports stars, and whoever, when they take their falls from grace? And let me just ask, because this article was not real solid in it.
Evidentiary. It was very
right for many reasons. But also it also said that basically Black people eat popcorn and enjoy when their people take a fall from grace. At the same time, though, it says that Black men can make an easier comeback than Black women. So I was really confused. It didn't have a great thread. So break it down for me.
Okay. Now, that article in particular, I think that the thesis, the kernel of it, it had some weight to it. But then the backing up of it is just like a good example of how blog posts be slipping. My day when I came up on the interwebs. Blog posts used to be like essays, right? And now, you know, you got three, you know, they're like Tumblr pieces, all of them, right? You know, all of them. Like, I woke up and I'm ranting and I'm not backing it up with anything but my feelings and fuck all y'all, right? Like, and that's how a blog post goes nowadays. And that's okay. But what my takeaway of it is, absolutely the kernel of that is true. We treat women differently than men. That being said, when you compare Azealia Banks to a Kanye West, they're on very different parts any level of downward spiral. Like Azealia, you know, she got a lot behind her, way more than Kanye, right? So she been off on way more stuff than Kanye, even though they're both eccentric. They both have unpopular opinions, and we don't know how much of their opinions, how many of their opinions are due to them just being themselves or them attributing it to the mental illness. But at the same time, they're in very different zones of the way that they have been acting out. Azealia has been doing a lot for a long, long time, and it hasn't had the level of success or even a fraction of what Kanye's success has been. That being said,
can I just pause really quickly right there? I just want to pause and say, let's also, there has to be something to time served, right? Time served and to look back on, okay, where has this person come from? What did this person used to bring to the table? What has happened? I mean, I still do believe that losing your mother is a big deal. Even just the other day, Todd from Candy Burris, from Real Housewives of Atlanta, but also a very successful and talented Grammy winner herself. Her husband lost his mother recently. It was very public. And he basically posted a picture on Instagram with him and his mom and a picture of Kanye and his mother and said, you know, these things take a toll on us. And it doesn't seem that Kanye ever had an opportunity to heal. I also mark that, as you know, as a place that definitely was a turn for the worse for him. But I also would like to bring up the fact that Kanye was riding hard for Black people, and we turned our back on him when he made those remarks about Bush during Hurricane Katrina.
Did he get backlash from Black people for that?
He got backlash, and he didn't get support when people came for him. Instead, he wound up having to apologize. Black people did not have his back when he made that statement. And when white people came for Kanye's neck and eventually forced him to apologize to W for those remarks, there was not one loud Black person in the media who said, no, he shouldn't have to apologize. Tails were tucked.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to, that was my little speech. Go on.
Okay. Well, I could see that. But you know, I was just talking to someone today about this, where they were talking about how someone had come into a community and then was complaining about, well, Black folks and when Black folks, and it's a huge pet peeve of mine that when people have an experience, maybe with specific Black folks that they were hoping to have their back, or specific Black folks that are behaving badly, there's kind of like a collective retribution that we all have to pay as Black folks. It's a far cry to go from George Bush doesn't care about Black people to I'm voting for Donald Trump. That's a long road. Like that's
No doubt. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying there was a time where Kanye was very different, and he was really here for us. And
this was Talib Kweli's sentiment in his tweets to Kanye, his open tweets to Kanye, as well as T.I., right? Both T.I. and Talib Kweli have openly tweeted to Kanye, and the energy of their tweets was very much like, yo, come home, come and heal. There's clearly something up. I don't know you to be the person that you are right now. And I feel like there are some people that really believe in him, that really would have his back, that really could help him in a healing process. But if he is suffering from a severe mental illness, that could be stopping him from accessing that healing and that help in those people. And that is sort of the tragedy of some forms of mental illness, particularly bipolar disorder, manic episodes, is that there's such an element of isolation that comes with it.
And so treating him differently than Azealia Banks, what do you think about that? I mean, obviously she's the obvious example right now, but there was Lauryn Hill. I don't feel like Lauryn Hill truly fell from grace. She fell from my grace, but most people are still repping pretty hard for Lauren. I mean, she's not making the money that she used to make, but I don't think she's really going for that right now. I don't see anyone bringing up Lauren's very loudly voiced views on the queer community.
That were not positive.
And kind of other than that one article that we discussed briefly that said, you know, the miseducation was actually quite misogynist, I haven't really seen many people say that about her, that actually her views can be quite skewed when it comes to women. Her, you know, Erica got a lot of shit this year, deserved, over some comments she made. Those haven't been forgotten as quickly because she, you know, then went on to rep for R. Kelly. So she wasn't doing herself any justice. But
that's whack.
But Lauryn Hill, like, I don't really hear people talking about the things that have stood out for me personally as a Lauryn Hill fan. Did she really fall from grace? Because that was one of the examples given.
Well, there was definitely the sense that, well, first of all, I don't feel like she should have had to spend a day in jail for her tax bill. I feel like there were people in that stratosphere for whom her tax bill would have been easy to raise or to pay alone, even. And that was whack. But
absolutely. That was definitely whack.
That right there was one thing. But there are definitely people that just don't feel like they should ever or whatever stand in line or pay for a Lauryn concert, because so much of her stuff came out and being really, really unprofessional, or what is seen as unprofessional, with her fans. And a lot of people felt betrayed by that. Look, I felt betrayed when Most took my money for some tickets and then didn't show up to Vienna, when Most Def did that, when Yasiin Bey did that, right? Like, and that was him, like, essentially, like, being held back by court order. And I still felt betrayed, right? So, I mean, I understand that disappointment is very real, that people feel. But at the same time, I don't really think that anybody is saying, like, I don't want to hear what Lauryn puts out. Like, I think that if Lauryn had a team behind her and had the will and the energy and whatever to do it, and she put out a surprise album tomorrow, it would break iTunes. I really do.
I think so too. So where is the difference? Where are Black men being treated better or with more compassion than Black women when they have any type of challenge
I think the way that it's being treated differently is that with Black women, I didn't see a whole lot. I don't generally see a rush to for a radical shift or downward spiral kind of display in behavior be attributed to mental illness. There's usually a very slow, like, you have to exhibit, you have to show out, you have to be extra for your behavior to be seen as mental illness. There's so much symptoms of depression or bipolar disorder because of stereotypes around Black women that get attributed to angry Black women or stank Black women or bitter Black women, as opposed to, like, yo, that's a depressed Black woman, that's a broken Black woman, that's a traumatized Black woman. That doesn't get talked about with the readiness of, someone's having a drug outbreak or someone's coming down really bad. I mean, and I think that does happen more readily. I feel like Whitney Houston was laughed at when she was struggling with her addiction and was giving concerts that were not her best work. I think, yeah, definitely.
As was Mariah Carey. Mariah Carey got basically booed off the stage, and the video went around the world when she wasn't able to hit her high notes as she used to be able to. And, you know, I don't know if anything was ever confirmed, but at the time it was said that she was struggling with depression and that she was, you know, taking antidepressants. I think I can agree with you to a certain extent. I think that those words do get thrown around, but in a derogatory sense. So, you know, there will be tweets calling Azalea Banks a psychotic bitch and why won't she just kill herself?
Right.
I don't think people understand the gravity of writing something like that for the whole world to see. Whereas it seems with Kanye, while everyone, you know, might be like, oh, that nigga crazy, like, you hear that, but you don't hear the level of malice behind it.
And vitriol, just right. Disappear yourself. I mean, like, even if you just look at T.I., and I get that his relationship with Azealia Banks is very different than his relationship with Kanye, right? But, you know, she was beefing with Iggy Azalea and had mentioned, you know, through some shots at T.I., and T.I. Was like, I'm gonna push you down the stairs, right? Like, I mean, like, this level of, like, yo, that's like a physical threat. Like, that's actually kind of illegal. You know, like, at what point would you just, like, document that?
Right.
nobody is threatening to push Kanye down the stairs because he just, I mean, like, people paid $100 for those tickets to that concert and then stood around for like 5 hours to get nothing but a breakdown.
Well, they're getting their money back, so.
That's still their whole night, their whole, whatever they, you, people travel for those things. I mean, like, it's a lot. It's a lot.
In other news, I would like to give a shout out, actually, to what I will call the best apology of 2016. We've seen a lot of apologies this year. And I have to say, this apology seems like the most genuine apology I've ever read online. I would like to read an apology from the magazine. Magazine Black Hair issued a faux apology for featuring a white model on the cover. I don't know if the model actually identifies as white. I know that the model is Malaysian. And
she describes herself as white passing.
White passing, exactly. So I would be careful to say that she's white.
Mm-hmm.
But she was featured on the cover of Black Hair magazine, looking basically like a light-skinned black chick with, you know, the big curls, wearing it kind of down and fro-y. And their apology was weak, but hers was amazing. She first of all called them out and said that the picture that they used was at least 3 to 4 years old when she was only 15 years old. At the time, she called herself uneducated, which is no excuse, she goes on to say, but she didn't know about cultural appropriation or the impact that it has on people of color. She said the picture, she never knew that it would be used for the cover of Black Hair, and she apologizes sincerely because it's kept Black women from being on the cover. I could read the whole apology, but it's quite long. But I thought, oh, wow, look at that. Look at that, a real apology. What do you think? First of all, I would like to say, though, I'm not surprised to find a white chick on the cover of a Black magazine, for real, for real. In the days of Rachel Dolezal, come on.
Right, right. It was a matter of time. This is coming. And, you know, and we know they like them as light as possible. Let's be real. Exactly. Colorism is a real thing.
Colorism is very real.
So, of course, to the untrained eye, there's very little difference or no difference whatsoever between a biracial, like a Zendaya, for example, and an Angelina Jolie, like in terms of racial makeup. Like they just wouldn't be able to discern. That being said, I think I'm so glad. I mean, I think the problem is, in general, is that white people don't make waves. White people know, but it's wasted knowledge. White people continuously take this knowledge. They harass Black folks with this knowledge. They pilfer all these amazing books that have been written about this knowledge. They understand it. They got Tumblr. They got Instagram. They got, do you understand what I mean? Like, they have so many places that they can go. There's people on YouTube that just give us free college seminars on critical whiteness and all manner of things. And so white people have been absorbing this knowledge in mass, actually, for a minute.
For sure.
And sitting on it.
Mm-hmm.
They do nothing with it. And when it comes their time to shine, they say things like, it was just a joke, you're taking it too seriously, that's not how I meant it, that's not how it was meant or intended. And it's like, why on earth do you even have this knowledge if this is how you're going to react when it's your time to actually stand for something? I mean, I'm in full sort of agreement with that Afropunk article that said white people don't give a fuck. I told y'all white people don't give a fuck. And it was about the vote. And it's like, it's not that white people are actively racist. It's not like white people are sitting around, you know, thinking about like, how can I harm a Black person today or whatever? Like, clearly right. Not.
No.
It's more like if they can have their latte or if they can go about their lives and things can go as normal for them and something atrocious is about to happen to the Black person down the block because of a simple action that they take or not take, they just don't give a fuck. It doesn't affect them. They're not checking for it, you know? And so if they're not even going to be inconvenienced, I mean, like, I know young people type fast. That Instagram apology may have seemed long, but I really don't think that she spent a whole lot of time on it. Like, it seemed like a stream of consciousness. It seemed very authentic. I think that's why it resonated with people.
Mm-hmm.
That she just sat there and was like, like, damn, and then wrote something in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And
but so, it was considered, right? It was
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And even said, even if in this apology, I have said something, I have blind spots, come for me.
Right, right. She ended her apology with that.
Right. She was like, even in this apology, I might have some blind spots. So let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Speak on up. And I'm ready for that. And I think that level of readiness and that level of like, let me inconvenience myself. Let me feel some level of discomfort in this. Is absolute proof positive to me that she is a woman of color. You know what I mean? White passing as she may be. Mm-hmm. Do you understand what I mean? This sense of like, no. That the white fragility, that kind of response, like, I've been crying about this because I didn't mean to, and it just makes me feel horrible.
I mean, I'm like, glad you bring that up. You know who just did that? Cheska Lee, as you like to call her, Francesca Ramsey. She reposted her video from last year's MTV Decoded, where she describes the true origins of Thanksgiving. Mm. And in reposting it, she apologized for one line, and it's hard. I had to listen for it. I, of course, rewatched the video where she says, you know, basically she's kind of being dismissive and says, and then they came back and killed all Native Americans. And she apologized for that line. She said, obviously, they didn't kill all Native Americans. We have Native Americans who are still, you know, and goes on and on and on. And I was just like, wow. You know, even for, and this, it's so basic. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to do if someone gets right.
You can be wrong.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean anything. It, like, it doesn't take anything away from you. It doesn't mean that you didn't try. It doesn't mean that you're not a good person. You can be wrong. And this sense of someone's lived reality is more important than your feelings is not something that we are dealing with people that can recognize in mass. I think that's a huge problem. That's a big, big problem.
In our second segment, it's our anniversary. It's our anniversary. So, 1 year in review. I took a look. I didn't take a tally, but I did take a look into the hot topics over the last year. We recorded our first podcast, I believe, on something like the 24th of November. And it wasn't until our second podcast that we had you with the bad sound. Nobody could understand what was happening. That's not what it was. It was you hungover after Thanksgiving.
Talk about that. That's what I
But our hot topics over the last year have been sexual assault. It's come up quite a bit. Beyonce.
Emma. Always. Siempre.
No!
Yes. Yes, Queen Bey. Yeah, bow down.
No. And the many different ways of the mistreatment of Black women, obviously. So I would like to hear from you, my D-Nice. What are some of your highlights?
Some of my highlights. Well, some of my highlights was talking about the situation breaking down the Lena Dunham nonsense. I feel like that was just a lot to unpack for me. People, and in that, I would, because I lump them together. They are BFFs too, is Lena Dunham, Amy Schumer. And I try not to focus too much on white nonsense, but that was just so layered for me because, of course, it's what the internet just gives us the possibility to look at stuff that we've had to face privately for so long. I remember in 2000 or so, like a long, long time ago, I was organizing a performance series for queer performers of color. And it was supported by the entire queer community in Seattle. And I was there I ended up having like a 5-hour conversation with the poet Christos, Native American queer poet. And, you know, one of the things that she's famous for is a poem about her having to deal with a white woman's tears as she tells the white woman that she cannot come into a woman of color space, and having this woman like cry all over her and stuff. And so, you know, I remember us like unpacking that poem and unpacking that situation that we deal with so often, where we have to stop everything and take care of white folks, even when we are trying to be very intentional about creating spaces for ourselves, so that we can have a little bit of breathing room from that and focus on us, that we still have to stop everything and take care of white folks. Case in point, when I was organizing a Woman of Color festival, I did security, right? Like, so I had to be on the perimeter in my little golf cart because it was in the woods. And right. You know, it was back in the day, I was like topless. And right, like that. And I'm there in my little golf cart, you know, like, you know, chasing off Jimmy Bob and them. And, you know, they come for us, right? You know, you have to make an effort. It wasn't hikers that stumbled upon the space. It was that when people hear that we want something for ourselves, it's like they want everything but the burden. Black culture is such a commodity. They want our clothes. They want to know about us. They're super curious. They, you know, I think the greatest American export is actually Black culture.
Absolutely.
And so there's such a fetishizing mm-hmm. of us that they come for us, whether by good intentions or bad, they come for us. And we have to be like, you know, real clear about those boundaries. And so when you're examining the actions of someone who says or wants to be really, really clearly, and I believe in their heart of heart, you know, that they want to be progressive, they want to be woke, they want to be with it, they want to be feminist, they want to be all the things. And yet and still have such a major blind spot when it comes to race. This is something that we've been having to deal with for a very, very, very long time. And so talking about that and unpacking all the things with that was a highlight for me. And for you, Ms. CC?
So I have to say, a highlight for me, I have two. One was, and this is the true highlight, the true, very serious highlight for me was we did several shows talking about the Holtzclaw case. And it felt so great to go from talking about the case and the lack of media coverage and, you know, all of the things surrounding this case and how it's, you know, not a standalone thing and so on and so forth. Feeling quite, not necessarily hopeless, but just quite overwhelmed with how often it happens and how often it goes unchecked, to go into this man being found guilty. And then to have another show where we get to, you know, talk about the fact that he's never getting out of prison. I think that was a real highlight for me, because while it doesn't eradicate how many women will suffer, have suffered, and have had no experience of justice, and how even women in that case don't necessarily have an experience of justice because their counts were not counts that were included in the guilty charge. At the same time, it just felt really like, okay, yeah, this is possible. This was also something that was grassroots led. You know, I sat on a webinar talking to the women who were on the ground leading that movement. That was a real highlight for me. And another highlight, which is a less serious one, is the fact that we talked about Chirac about 2-3 podcasts in, and I went to see that just recently, on Halloween, actually. And I guess I could have stayed in the theater if I would have seen it as a Halloween movie. That would have helped me. But no, instead I had to leave the theater. I had to leave the theater after about an hour because it was just that bad. And I felt good about how we talked about it, because neither one of us had actually seen it. When we talked about it, we were talking more on the commentary and the way he went about it and so forth. And I just felt, yes, reaffirmed in the notion that Spike Lee ruined his legacy with that film. It is trash.
How you really feel, though? How you really feel? What's going on with you and your feelings?
I'm just saying, I have to be real on it.
But ruined, though? I mean, come on, we got to look at the subtotal. We're going to give him a pass with that.
if he could come back from it, I might give him a pass. But I promise you, D-Nice, that film is like Snoop from Baltimore, right? Snoop, who is like always been Snoop, was found on the streets, starred as Snoop on The Wire. They put Snoop in some femme role. I was just like, who is this? No, I can't. I can't even get started with that film. Anyway, where do we go from here? What are we looking forward to in continuing with this podcast? How do we grow? What do we want? What do we want to see happen?
What do we want to see happen with the podcast?
Yeah, just give me like 1 to 2 to 3 points.
Okay, you just increased it. Like, it's like when you get an assignment.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, like, sometimes, when I tell you to give me 3 points, you'd be like, well, I gotta be three. So I was just giving you a little bit of a range.
What's 2 to 3? One, I would like more listener engagement. I want letters.
Yes.
I want communication. I want us to do that. So have more listener engagement is huge for me.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I want more interviews. Mm-hmm. I would like for one thing that I really, really want is to talk to queer people everywhere about what's happening in their lives right now and how the things that we talk about are affecting them personally.
Mm-hmm.
And for reasons, I think I would like us to travel more because we travel so much already. Just in our own lives, that I would like us to take the podcast with us more places and be able to connect to queer communities in the places that we go to. I mean, if you think of the possibilities within that, between the two of us, we've probably hit a solid, just in this last year alone, 10 countries, right? Now, what if in even half of those countries, like 5 of those countries, we were able to talk to people there and queer people there specifically about their experiences there. I think that would be great. Like, we don't hear about that a lot. We don't hear the voices of people from those places a lot and to hear about what those communities are going through a lot. So I think that's awesome. That's what I would like to see.
Okay. I commit to all three of those. I can think of 3 interviews I could maybe get lined up here in the next weeks. So how about we commit to that for 2017 going forward? Interviews, connecting with the queer communities in the places in which we travel. Ooh, I have a big travel plan coming up where that's definitely going to be possible. I can't even tell y'all about it yet. I can't tell
y'all about
it yet. That's a lot. I got to secure it first. But yeah, I commit to all of that.
Okay, let's do that. Let's do all of it. Let's have, yeah. 2017 is going to be our year. It definitely needs to be a year where I need more of the queer truth because I am really putting a lot of time and energy right now into things that energize me and make me feel good because we all need more of that right now. We all need a lot of that. So that's where I'm putting a lot of energy.
And in our final segment, what are we looking forward to? What are we excited about? Hit it!
Papa, papa, papa. Khaled Kali is coming to town. I wonder if I will wow him with my freestyle. You said no. Not really.
I was contemplating.
Not really, Mr. Kali going to be like, nope. So that's great. Gregory Porter was just here. I heard he just brought the whole house down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh man, I can't do everything, people. No. I cannot do everything, but I heard it was amazing. Black Woman's Brunch is coming up, which is great. I'm looking forward to that. Our Christmas edition or holiday edition, whatever you want to call it. Kwanzaa celebrations galore are happening here. I wish that the queer community in Vienna, because I've been trying to get more involved with the general queer scene here. I wish that we had special support as a queer family around the holidays, because unfortunately a lot of us struggle with disconnection from family on the holidays. A lot of us struggle with isolation and depression, and our community, specifically LGBT community, has a very, very high suicide rate, and this is the highest point of year for those rates to happen. A lot happened during the holiday season, so I really wish that we had more of a push to come together as queer communities during the holidays. But I think that's something that I'm hoping, like, to try and be involved and get other queer organizations involved in for 2017. But this year, I'm, you know, helping to make things possible for the Black community here in Indiana. What are you looking forward to, CC?
I am looking forward to catching up on something that came on, or it might even still be running, on BBC Two called Black and British. Now, I mentioned once on the podcast that I went to this art exhibition at the Black Cultural Archives, and they basically asked all these questions about what happened to the Black people from the Georgian era without answering any of them. And I found that amazingly disappointing. Well, a man who did a two-part documentary last year on BBC called The Forgotten Slave Owners has created this, Black and British, which I'm excited to watch because it details the answers to that exact question. Where are the Black people who came before Windrush? So I'm really looking forward to that series. I don't own a television, so that's why I haven't been able to watch it yet. I will be watching it over the weekend and hopefully learning quite a bit about Black British history. And other than that, not much. I am old. I was on my feet all day yesterday cooking. I am happy to rest. You got nothing for me? Okay. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. You can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/TheQueerTruth. Until next time, peace out.